Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for Net at Night is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Net at Night with Amber MacArthur and Leo Laporte, episode 137 for January 27th, 2010. Web usability guru Jacob Nielsen. Net at Night is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/night. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/night. And by GoToMeeting. Picture yourself on a phone call sharing and explaining something visual with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/night. It's time for Net at Night from Petaluma, California, U.S. of A. I am Leo Laporte.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
And we are excited. Hello, Amber Mac.
Hello, Leo. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Tomorrow's the big day as we record this, the Apple announcement. And many people will be listening to this after the Apple announcement and will laugh and mock us in our excitement.
I know. You know what? I don't think I can remember a tech announcement in recent history that has generated so much buzz, especially when no one actually knows what the product is.
It's amazing. Now, I know you've been doing, and certainly I've been doing, press interviews. Every pundit has been. And it's funny how everybody on these interviews just goes, so what's it going to be?
I know.
And what do you think of it? You know, and it's like, we don't know. It could be iPod socks for all we know.
I know. And that's the scary part, I think, is trying to predict what it is. I was very careful about saying anything too specific because I really have no idea. I mean, I've read all the blogs and all the rumors.
Right.
But at the end of the day, I just don't know. None of us are going to know until tomorrow. And Leo, I know you have big plans on TWiT.
We're going to cover it nonstop. I call it our obsessive compulsory coverage.
Of the
iPod announcement or whatever it is, the iTablet. I don't think it's going to have an I in the name. That's my one prediction. I think the name is not anything anyone has said so far.
It's a whole new category of names.
It's a great website. David Weiss is a developer, and he did on his website, unweary.com, a prediction scorecard. I have it in my hands here. 4-page PDF with all sorts of guesses, and you score it, right? So I've written down on these four sheets my predictions. I think I posted them online, but I think I accidentally posted the wrong thing without the predictions. So I have it printed out with the predictions, and I'll redo it after the show and post it on my blog. But, you know, things like tablet price, tablet size, whether it has built-in internet connectivity, cell phone connectivity, or a docking mechanism. Does it have a built-in camera? I say no. Does it play video? I say yes. I mean, and all the names, iTablet, iSlate, iGuide, iBook, iPad, Canvas, and you pick which. So, and then you get a point for everything you get correct. And at the end, you get your score. And so we'll just see. I want everybody to download this. and go through it. And I think it's a great idea. It's a lot of fun.
It's fun. I mean, my brother actually wrote me an email on Twitter today, and he runs a blog called dcable.com, which is all about cutting the cable cord. And he put his predictions up on his blog in terms of what he thinks that product's going to be. It's so funny how people get so obsessed about it, and everybody wants to try to figure out what it will actually include.
Well, one thing you can say is how good Apple's marketing is. I mean, this is brilliant, right?
It's unbelievable. The fact that, I mean, at first I was trying to resist talking about it too much because I just felt as it was kind of overhyped, but you really can't ignore it. It's everywhere. And every person I see, I mean, people who I don't even know that well, who know I'm in the tech space, they're like, what's it going to be? And I just got off the phone with my mom and we were talking a little bit and my mom said, so what do you think the big announcement is going to be? And I said, Mom, how do you know about this?
Yeah,
she's like, well,
I
know it's a tablet, but what's it going to be like? And I'm thinking, okay, my mom is in her mid-60s, and she's on my case because I don't have a good prediction in terms of what this device is going to be. I know.
Wow. Wow.
Frightening.
So I'm sure you saw this. This was a little blooper on CNBC this afternoon. He was, the chairman of McGraw-Hill was talking and said, yes, there's going to be a tablet. Yes, it'll run the iPhone operating system. Yes, we're going to be on it. McGraw-Hill textbooks are going to be on it. It's going to be a great opportunity for everybody. He kind of leaked out a bunch of stuff about it, which was inevitable. Apple's very good at keeping the lid on things, but it's a little harder for them to keep their partners quiet.
True.
In fact,
I know.
It's remarkable how well it's been kept quiet up to now.
It's amazing. I knew as soon as I saw the trending topic on Twitter that said McGraw-Hill CEO that something had to be up.
Yeah. I mean, his name is McGraw. He probably can get away with it.
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, we've got a great show coming up. We're going to talk to a hero of yours.
Yes, I'm a little bit nervous, Leo, I have to say. I think my mind might go completely blank because for years, I have to say, I worshipped Jacob Nielsen, who is a web usability guru, and I carried around his book like a Bible, and I paid attention to every single thing he said about designing good websites. And so it's a thrill to have him all on today, and he's going to be talking about his new book, which is about eye tracking.
Ah, that should be fun. So Jacob Nielsen will join us in just a little bit to talk about usability and... Of course, he doesn't know any more about the tablet than we do, I don't think. But maybe he does. And we'll certainly ask him, you know, what that form factor requires to be successful. Because it's something very different. And he's an expert on all of this. In fact, the Nielsen Norman Group, which is his group, consults companies like Apple on usability. They're really good at that stuff. So this will be kind of fun.
It'll be fun to get his take on it. And Leo, for our first news item, I thought I'd sort of talk a little bit about the tablet in terms of the reaction online. And if you remember a while ago, we had Dustin Curtis on. He redid the American Airlines website.
Yep.
He's a web designer. And you've probably seen this all over the internet today, leaked Apple tablet photos. And he did a little photoshopping and came up with a mock-up of in terms of what he thought the tablet might look like. But people online, some people thought it was real, thought he got copies of it.
I saw it. On one of the major networks as if it were real this morning.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, people are, you know, this is why we have to do such full coverage, right? Because unfortunately, the mainstream media has not a clue.
And that is so funny. I didn't think it would actually make it that far. I knew people expected it or thought that maybe it was real, but I didn't think it actually made it onto the news. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Well, good for Dustin for getting such attention. And, you know, I mean, it's a pretty good guess because it's basically a buttonless giant iPod Touch.
Yeah.
And, well, that's probably exactly what it's going to be, but we'll find out tomorrow. Very exciting. Before we get to more links and our guest, Jacob Nielsen, I would like to mention our friends at Citrix. You know, they do that great meeting product. Do you use GoToMeeting ever?
I have used it before.
Yeah, I use it. We use it all the time. We even use it on shows. Ray Maxwell uses it to show screenshots on the shows. And I know the other day, Steve Gibson was saying, I should be running GoToMeeting right now. GoToMeeting is fantastic. I know maybe if you've ever used online meeting software before, you're probably a little nervous about it, that maybe it's not secure or difficult to use or tricky. But we've all been in this situation where you've got something you want to show, but you're on a phone call. You want to show them a spreadsheet or the PowerPoint presentation you worked so hard on, a chart or graph, something that would really bring the information you're talking about to life. This is where GoToMeeting is so great. While you're on the phone call, and by the way, it comes with free voice over the internet and teleconferencing. So, you know, you can use it for teleconferencing as well. But while you're on the call, you say, okay, I got to show you this. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Click the Join Now button. Now, they don't need to have the software installed. As soon as they press Join a Meeting, it takes 30 seconds. The software installs. It's a little Java. It's just a little tiny Java client. Suddenly, they're seeing your desktop. You're showing them the PowerPoint or the spreadsheet. I mean, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and this is a case where it's just going to save you time, it's going to save you money on travel, and you're just going to love it. You can schedule them in advance or on the fly. It's 100% secure, 128-bit encryption, point-to-point, so you don't have to worry about that. It's great for training, collaboration, product demos, and, of course, sales presentations. I want you to try it free. Go to gotomeeting.com/night right now for a 30-day trial. Absolutely free. As many meetings as you want, as long as you want. GoToMeeting.com/night. Give it a try. GoToMeeting. It's a great way. If you're, say, working with somebody like Amber or Jacob on your website, being able to show them what you're doing, what you're thinking of, have them show you what they're thinking of. It's really a lifesaver. Go to Meany.com.
You don't have to travel.
And you don't have to travel, which Amber and I both hate to do. You do a lot more of it than I do.
Leo, that should just be their tagline. Forget about everything right. else. Just say.
Do more, travel less. I think that's what it says. Go to Meany. Yeah,
that's all they need.
Item two
is about Foursquare, and I just read this before I jumped on Skype with you. Foursquare, which we've talked about many times before, has a relationship with a newspaper across Canada called Metro News, which is a free local daily newspaper. Now, this is an editorial partnership for Foursquare, and it's kind of interesting. They're doing a couple of neat things. One is they're rolling in editorial content into Foursquare based on different communities, so you can get restaurant reviews and all that other type of content. But the most interesting thing I think that they're doing is the newspaper, because they have started this really tight relationship with Foursquare, is that they're going to have mayor deals every Friday in the publication. So this will be instead of regular advertisements that companies will be buying.
So I'm looking right now. Here's a Metro tip. Try the fresh snapper ceviche at Chimichanga. So they've got reviews, but that's real. So tell folks who don't know about Foursquare, what does that mean, the mayor reward?
A mayor reward means that if you frequent a certain location more than anyone else, you can unlock the mayor badge. So, for example, I think, Leo, you're mayor of certain locations.
I'm a mayor of Quitchit Cottage. I'm a mayor of my health club. I'm a mayor of I was very proud, became the mayor of the local movie theater. So you could do that. You could put that in the newspaper, say, hey, if you're the mayor of the Petaluma Cinemas, you get two free passes to tonight's show.
Isn't that awesome? I mean, it's such an interesting way to advertise, because I imagine that a lot of people ignore the classifieds in newspapers, right, especially these days. People go online to find anything on Craigslist or other sites. So the idea that they're rolling in this extra social networking or social media feature, I think is it's kind of a big leap for the ad world.
Yeah, and just to make it clear, the way you become a mayor is by having the most visits to a venue.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a reward for being mayor, what that does is it's encouraging people to come visit your business. So if you say free passes to the mayor tonight, that means more people will go to the cinema and check in. Now, there's been some complaints on Foursquare, because you don't actually have to be at the place to check in.
Yeah, and there's been some complaints as well from, I think, employees of certain locations, right, Leo? Because they can obviously participate in the
game. An employee can always be a mayor, because they work there every day.
Yeah, have they done anything? I guess they can't really do anything to...
I don't know how they police that.
No.
It's a potential problem. I'm sure they've thought about it. We talked to to Naveen from Foursquare. Was it Naveen? No, Dennis we talked to.
Dennis, yeah.
Yeah, from Foursquare. And I'm sure he's a very smart, both smart guys. I'm sure that they're thinking about this, but it is a potential problem. And there's been some complaints, people saying, you know, you, because I could load up Foursquare and check in anywhere, pretty much, you know?
And so, yeah, but what about Gowalla? I mean, I haven't used that service yet, but I know that we had them on the show. And I think they have that type of functionality, don't they?
Which, Google Latitude?
No, Gowalla.
Oh, Gowalla.
Yeah.
Gowalla.
Did they let you become?
It was my sense that Gowalla, you couldn't check in unless you were actually there.
See, that's what I mean. That's how I think it's different. Because yeah. I think I read that. When I read a comparison of Foursquare and Gowalla, I think that was one thing that really separated them. Because actually, Gowalla truly is location-based.
Right.
So you have to be at that specific venue.
It's an interesting problem, but it's a minor one.
It's a minor one. Yeah. It's a minor. Leo and I are really getting a little bit...
It's not going to change the world one way or the other.
No. But it's kind of fascinating right now, isn't it, Leo, when we exist in our little bubble? And
you know, I turned off Google Latitude. See, Google Latitude, there's no check-in. It just follows you.
Yeah.
So if you have a Google phone, which I do, I have the Nexus One and love, as you move around, I had to turn it off because people knew where I live, everywhere I was. They could, you know, it just automatically. And if you're my Latitude friend, now you can specify in your relationships on Latitude how much accuracy your friends get. But see, I've just all along saying, yeah. So now there's like 1,000 people who, if they follow me on Latitude, would know exactly, like longitude and latitude down to the foot, where I am.
I know. I've heard some pretty crazy stories about couples who have that on their phones, right, and how one partner is always following the other person and asking them, you know, interrogating them about where they were. And that's a little bit too much for me. I usually turn down all of those requests.
Yeah, I should have. Now I just kind of make it like it says what city I'm in, but that's fine. Just, you know, yeah, you just know what city I'm in.
Yeah, that's fine.
And
that's
with Foursquare, if you're worried about stalkers, what you could do with Foursquare is you check in as you leave or go off.
Yeah. I actually, I did a photo shoot last night for my book, and the woman doing my makeup is a Foursquare user, and she said she started doing that a lot. As soon as she and her friends will leave a location, that's when they'll actually...
But that defeats the purpose a little bit, doesn't it? Because, I mean, isn't the idea that your buds will say, oh, great, you know, Amber's down at Chimichanga's, let's all go down and have a beer with her?
Well, I think for some people, they just want to leave a trail behind. So it's more about tweeting that they were at a certain venue and more like almost like a live blog. But I think for some people, they're just worried about stalking issues and some people showing up who they really don't want there.
Well, the real truth of this is, it's all nuts anyway. I'm giving a next month a seminar for parents. It's called Wired Families Safe Kids. And I'm doing this with Jennifer and Abby, because we're a wired family, about how to keep your kids safe. I'm of the opinion that it's very important that your kids be on the internet. So obviously the easy way to keep them safe is not let them use a computer. But let's presume that to be, you know, living residents of the 21st century, kids need to know how to use this stuff and need access to it. So how do you keep them safe? What are the limits? What are the guidelines? What is Twitter? What is Facebook? What is Foursquare? What are the risks involved? And I think what I'm going to do at the beginning is say, now, there's a whole scale that you can operate on, from complete privacy to complete and utter lack of privacy. I know a fella who has a scale. When he weighs himself, it tells you his weight. Who has a little thing called a weirdo, has a Fitbit, when you know how many steps he took, has a little thing on his phone, you know exactly his longitude and latitude at any given moment. The guy will tweet, you know, that he's having lunch. The guy will put on his Facebook a picture of his car. And this guy is living in public, right? Is this guy nuts? And they all go, yeah, he's nuts. And I'll say, it's me. I'm the crazy one. Help me, stop me.
Oh, Leo, you would like this story then. For my book cover, what they wanted to do is they wanted to have it. There's a picture of me, but they wanted stock photography behind me, just of, you know, random people. And I said to them, I said, well, why don't I go on Twitter and see if a bunch of people will show up for the book cover shoot? And so last night, I find myself in this empty warehouse with a photographer, makeup, hair person. And I'm talking to the makeup woman, and her name is Lucky. And I said, well, you know, I'm waiting for people to show up. There should be about 20 people here, I think, who responded. She's like, oh, it's so cool that your friends are doing this. And I was like, oh, wait, I don't know most of these people. They're just showing up. But we had so much fun and everybody was great. And fortunately worked out really well. So I could be in the crazy category with you.
So how many people showed up?
There were almost 20 of us.
And you never met any of them?
I met about 4 or 5 of them.
These are the fans.
Fans is people who keep, you know, follow me on Twitter. So,
but now they're on the cover of your book.
Yeah, isn't that fun? So we're going to do some neat things with them with their Twitter handles. And I'm hoping on the website to have sort of a map where you can roll over the picture and see everybody's Twitter handles and their latest update. So try to sort of crowdsource the cover. This was my elaborate idea. I didn't know if it was going to work, but fortunately it turned out well.
That is really a great idea. I like that a lot.
It was really fun.
We're going to get to our guest in just a moment. Before we do, though, Jacob Nielsen is here. He's an expert on usability and design. And if you've got a website, you're going to really want to tune in. Stay tuned for this, because I'm sure he's going to just rake me over the coals. But I tell you, I have a way to have a great website, whether it's a blog, a photo site, a directory, whatever it is that you want to do, is Squarespace.com. That's the way to go. Squarespace is a wonderful place. It's web hosting plus the best software to make a gorgeous site. And with their templates that don't look like templates, you can have a design that even Jacob Nielsen would approve of. Because once you get the template, and there are, you know, a lot of great, beautiful templates, then you can customize them just with drag and drop using Ajax. You have control over every single element, every font, every color, every style. So it allows you to take one of the 14 basic templates and make it your own. No cookie cutter design here. In fact, if you know CSS, the sky's the limit. JavaScript can be embedded. Fantastic design. 100% CSS control, templates designed for developers or for somebody who doesn't know anything about it, just wants to look great. Squarespace is kind of the perfect site. As little as $8 a month, but you can try it free right now for 2 weeks without any obligation. You don't even need a credit card. Just go to squarespace.com/night. Squarespace.com/night, and you will be up and running on Squarespace in a minute. You can import all of your stuff very easily from your existing blog, whether it's TypePad or Blogger or WordPress. It just imports it and exports it, so you're never stuck. I love Squarespace. Amber's partner uses it. Chris uses it for his photo site and loves it.
And Leo, I have to just tell a quick little story about Squarespace because another makeup woman I know, Tracy Pert, she knew nothing about web technology or building a website. I sat down with her just before the holidays and I showed her Squarespace and I showed her exactly how it worked. So she signed up.
Oh, that's great.
She got her own site up and running. She blogs now on a regular basis.
Oh, that's
She's
so great.
All over it. She loves it. And this woman knew nothing about how to build a website. And now she has this professional looking site. So it's pretty awesome.
If you go to squarespace.com, you can look at the, they have a lot of sites of people who have given permission, including a bunch of portfolios. So if you're a makeup artist or a designer or a photographer, you can look at these portfolios and just, you know, look how different each and every one looks, how professional they are, how gorgeous they are. And, you know, one of the great things about Squarespace is your site will never be swamped. It will never go down. You could be slash dotted and dug, and Squarespace's amazing virtual server technology guarantees you as much bandwidth as you need automatically. Squarespace.com/night. Give it a try. I know you're going to love it. Are you ready to get Jacob? Are you okay? Are you going to take a deep breath? Don't hyperventilate, Amber.
I need to take a deep breath, Leo.
Jake, I've actually interviewed Jacob, I think, on the Screensavers. And he's just, you're absolutely right. He's a guru in this space. And partly because everything he does is research-based. He's not, you know, there are some gurus who make it up as they go along. You know, they say, well, in my, august impression is that that site stinks. But what Jacob does is they use the modern research techniques. Let's get him in here. Jacob Nielsen, so great to have you. Welcome to Net at Night.
Hi, Jacob.
Hi, Amber and Leo. Good to be on the show.
It's great to have you. You've been doing this for how long?
Oh, almost 30 years, 28 years or so.
But now, before there were websites.
Oh, much before there were websites. You know, we used to have something called computers in the old days. I actually worked on mainframe computers where you had only character-based screens.
Wow.
So that was the old days at IBM. But what's interesting was when the web came out, a lot of the early web applications were just like the IBM 3270 apps. You know, those full screen.
Ugly
and very clunky too,
right?
You had to click submit and then the screen would be sent back to the server. So that kind of interaction was 20 years ago, but it was also 5 years ago.
Did it offend you? Is that how you got into the user interface stuff? Did it just like, this is bad, this is ugly, this isn't how it should be?
Yeah, it was horrible, and it was just unpleasant and purely designed for the sake of the technology, not for the sake of people. And so my attitude has always been, it's not us who have to bow down to the computer, right? It's the computer that needs to adapt to us, to our limitations. And people have certain things they're good at and certain things they're bad at. And we're good at being creative and understanding things, coming up with new ideas. We're bad at remembering obscure codes. I mean, our memory is actually really weak.
So why are there so many bad user experiences out there? I mean, is it because there are too many technical people designing these sites or products? What is your opinion on that?
Well, sometimes people don't even care. So that's one problem. And they don't understand that if it's difficult to use, people are just going to leave their website. Or if it's an application, not use that software. But I think in a lot of other cases, the majority of cases, it's not that they want to hurt their customers. It's that they actually think it's an okay design. And that's because they can understand it. They can use it. Well, of course they can, because they build it. So they know all that stuff.
So we're really the worst people to ask whether a site is usable.
Exactly. You can never look at it yourself. because you know. And there's one thing you cannot do. You cannot just like kind of erase your brain
right.
and pretend not to know something if you do know it. So any background knowledge you have, you imply to the interpretation of any new information you see. And that's one of the good human skills. But the problem is if you do have that background knowledge, like say you, let's say you just work in a company. Well, if you work in a company, you know the product line, you know how it's organized, you know the special vocabulary or lingo they use in that industry. And then somebody comes from the outside, they don't know any of that. And they have a horrible time using the website.
Yeah.
That's so common on any kind of complex site like banking site, insurance sites, government sites, pharmaceutical, medical sites, all those type of sites are like that.
We all see sites like that, and we always wonder, why, how? This is terrible.
How is that possible? I know. Especially, I think some of the bigger, more complex sites are some of the worst designs in a lot of ways. It seems though, if you have a big team and lots of money behind it, it can get convoluted quite quickly.
Oh, I agree. Actually, often the more money they have, the worse the site.
Right.
Because they spend the money on the wrong thing. They spend the money on making it kind of fancy. They don't spend the money on kind of getting to the point. And actually often writing short and concisely takes more time. It's just going
blah, 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 going on.
You have to edit it. And now, so editors are well worth their money.
You use, in fact, your new book is called Eye Tracking Web Usability, but you've used eye tracking as one of the tools for a long time. Here's a heat map on your site where it shows the red is where people look the most,
yes,
and then as it gets cooler and cooler, that's where they look the least.
Right.
What did we learn from eye tracking?
Very simply, we learn where people look on the page, and that's only one of the many things we want to know about a website, but it's one of the important things we want to know. And so the screen you just showed before showed kind of the common reading pattern, which is, we call it the F pattern, because you can kind of see there's like a big stripe of red up at the top, and then there is a stripe down to the left, and there's a smaller, not quite a stripe, but kind of smaller red area going in a little bit further down. So it looks a little bit like an F if you kind of squint a bit.
It makes sense because they scan the headline, then they scan down the left side of the paragraphs looking at, you're really scanning, you're not reading.
People are scanning on the web, and then they read in a little bit from time to time, which causes that kind of F.
Right.
But a lot of people, when they produce content or they produce web pages, don't realize that this is a predominant way people access information. People just don't have time to read everything that's on the web, which is trillions of words, right? So we only have time to read what we really, really want in the moment. That's another thing. People are very, very fast-paced.
We're impatient.
Instant gratification is kind of the dominant mode here. And so that's why you have this scanning behavior and why it's so important to write the information on the website so people can pick out very fast, just like bang, bang, what are the key points?
What are some of the most common mistakes that people make when designing websites? Because there has to be sort of a top five or top 10 list that you have in your back pocket.
Right. What we just talked about, I think, is one of the common ones, which is just big blocks of text, just kind of, oh, it's so horrible and off-putting, and people just get, I'm just going to stay at the site because it's just too much work to be here. So that's one right there. And let's kind of bounce into another kind of extreme, which is too little information. Quite often when you click a button that says make the picture larger, you get a picture that's like 10% larger. And that's not it. You want to like make it huge.
Yeah. Yeah. 10% is not enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, I don't know how many sites do this, but it's extremely common. And so if we kind of just contrast those two scenarios, first of all, when you get to a site, you want to be oriented quickly. And that's another mistake. A lot of sites don't give you like the summary of headline, a tagline, what is this about? You want to get oriented quickly. You want to get on, should I stay? Should I leave? Which pages should I go to? Then if you are interested, then you want to be able to dig deeper. And that's why I say, for example, give me a huge picture if you really want to see the details, for example, on an e-commerce site of something you're thinking about buying. You do not want big pictures when you're just browsing. You want them when you want them. And so another classic mistake that we saw a lot in this eye tracking study is images as obstacle courses.
Oh, interesting.
And when you see kind of how the eye moves around a page, it kind of moves around the big glossy images. Sometimes we call it like the happy lady or the headphone lady that sort of sits on every website saying, smiling.
I hate those. Yeah.
And it's just not worth the eyeballs, right? And so people look around those.
Aren't our brains just designed to tune that stuff out, really? I mean, that's background noise, ultimately.
Completely. It's called selective attention, and that's a very basic human skill. One of the things we are, in fact, good at is just ignoring stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about how much information comes in and how puny our brains are, you know, they can only do one thing at a time. You've got to ignore almost all the stuff that's in the environment and just focus on the one thing that's going to kill you, like the saber-toothed tiger, or the one thing you're going to eat, like you're hunting the mammoth. So you focus on the important stuff and you ignore the rest. And this is also why banner blindness is such a big thing. You know, a lot of advertising on the web is completely wasted because people just never even look at it.
Hmm.
And we're very good at that, at screening out stuff we don't want.
Mm-hmm.
With advertising, is there anything specifically that you found in your studies that actually works?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, actually, we have a few things that do work, and one of them is
it's punch the monkey, Jacob. I'm running very upset with you.
No, that's a very temporary thing. I mean, the first time something like that comes out, maybe okay, it's cute, or at least you kind of look at it, but not in the long run. People just learn to screen out things. For example, any kind of bouncing, jumping thing, you tend to ignore because it's too often advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting, we found that the ads that are the most plain layout tend to get the most eyeballs. So if an ad is mostly text, then it gets looked at more than an ad that's mostly animation. Even though if we had not had the web and we'd had this interview, let's say 20 years ago, I would have said, like, based on sort of basic psychology, animation would attract the eye. And yes, it does. But a more important principle is selective attention, which is that you ignore stuff that you kind of know is not important to you. And so simple ads attract more attention than fancy ads. Other things that work well, I'm getting into kind of a little unethical point here, unfortunately, is if you design the ad to look like the website.
Oh, yeah.
So that looks like it's content. And this is, of course, contrary to the traditional approach of sort of so-called church and state, making the two look very different. But the eyeballs go more to things that look like the rest of the site. So design it like it belongs to the site. And the third point that works quite well is kind of cleavage.
Cleavage.
I was like, did Jacob Nielsen just say cleavage?
Oh no!
We did with science.
Let's be honest. Yeah,
that's where the eyeballs go. You know,
if you look at Facebook on the side there, there's a lot of Google style text ads, and there's a lot of cleavage.
Yeah, and I'm not recommending this as an approach.
No,
because one thing is you get the eyeball. The second thing is, do you also get the order? Do people actually think, wow, this product looks credible?
That's right.
That's
the next step. Yeah.
So, Jacob, you don't have any cleavage on your website,
no.
But I've noticed that it hasn't changed in years and years.
Well, I was going to be polite, but Jacob, do you think your site is kind of the paradigm for the best web design out there?
No, but just for me it is. And
it's very functional.
Yeah, and it kind of goes to the point that for different purposes you have different type of sites. So you're now showing mine, which is really very plain.
It's very text-heavy, yeah. Yeah.
And it kind of works because of what I'm trying to achieve, which is just to give people articles about usability. On the other hand, to go to the other extreme, we've done some user testing on movie sites and other entertainment type of sites. And there we get users saying, wow, if I'm going to go to a site for a film, I want it to look a little bit kind of glossy and glamorous. Yeah. I don't want it to look very plain. If I go into a website for, let's say, my stockbroker, it should not look like, you know, the Jacob Nielsen site, completely just text, but it shouldn't look like a movie site either. That's not going to be credible for a bank. So it depends on the genre, what type of design you're aiming at.
So just as
you've got a classic broker site.
Yeah, and it works very well. And just as banks, I mean, that's why banks look like banks. You want to put your money in something that looks like it's going to be there for a long time, not like the store down the street.
Exactly. And so looking this kind of this solid look, but also very functional look as well, because something like Fidelity is really an application. It's where you go and say, okay, what is the current, you know, price of, let's say, Apple or something like that tomorrow? Right. Is it up or down and so forth? And should I buy more or not? And if I want to buy more, the fewer click, the better, so you can get that processed, you know, right, while the stock is still at a good price.
Okay, you said the A word, and I know you've written a little bit about this, and you've done some interviews on it. Apple tomorrow is going to introduce some sort of tablet-like device. You must have thought a little bit about what that form factor, how that differs from, let's say, a laptop or a desktop computer, and what Apple would need to do to make that work.
Right. I think they're very different, again, in what they're good at. And the desktop computer is very good at information production. So if you're going to write, well, let's write a book like I just did, you want to have a big screen and a good keyboard and a mouse. A mouse is much better at pointing precisely than actually your fingers are. I mean, right, it's kind of moving the mouse is a more precise way of pointing. But tablets are good when you want to just sit and read in a more relaxed environment. It's not so relaxed to sit at your work computer or your desktop computer, even if it's you have it at home, it's still a work type of computer. It's not as portable so you can take it on the train or the bus if you're commuting. So there's a lot of these scenarios where the tablet is great. And we have, of course, many tablets already. We have the mini tablet in the form of many phones. And we have kind of a MIDI tablet in the form of like the Kindle, the Amazon reading device. And those devices work very well for information consumption, not so much for heavy-duty interaction, because you can only react to what's on the screen, and pointing is harder. So we've done a lot of course, we have not done any tests in the Apple tablet, because if we had, you know, I couldn't talk
about it. Yes.
So, but what we have done is lots of tests on the iPhone and also other touchscreen phones. And they're, of course, a smaller form factor. And for that, we see a lot of difficulty in people doing kind of more intricate interactions. Mm-hmm. So a key thing in designing for those is to scale back the complexity. So actually, my number one recommendation for mobile design is make a separate website or separate application. Don't take your big website and say, we can squeeze it down to a tiny screen because it's going to be too cumbersome to interact with it. So you've got to like cut down to those 20% of features that people really need on the go and put that on the small tablet. Now, if we had a bigger tablet, we could do more things. And so I think that's one of the things we can do here. But still, don't assume it's going to be like a desktop PC. Don't say put the same features on there, because we don't have the same interaction capabilities. We don't have a keyboard. We don't have a mouse, right? So we can't do those same type of things. But it's great for a little bit less heavy engagement, more of a consumption type of scenario, watching video clips, reading email, browsing, reading a book even, you know, which you wouldn't want to read a book on a traditional computer. People just don't do that. Done so many studies where users say, if there's a lot of text, I'm going to print it out. I'm not going to read it on the computer. And so the tablet could break that problem by being a more pleasant reading device.
What do you think are some of the best designed websites as far as from a user experience? Are there some that kind of stand out as models?
Well, for them, for their own good anyway, I think a lot of the more popular big sites are very good, but not necessarily to be emulated by other sites. But you know, Amazon.com is a great example of being a nice site for the purpose of selling books or buying books, you know. But if you were a normal site, you wouldn't want to do it. We actually just write last week doing a study of Amazon, not for them, because then again, I couldn't talk about it, but for a seminar we're going to do that's called, you know, what should you do the same as the big sites do? And often no, because Amazon has so many things on their pages that we often had people just not finding the feature they needed. And if they went to a normal site, where there were like a tenth of the features, but there was that one feature was there, now they could see it. So Amazon works for them because it's a very frequently used site for a lot of people that they've gone to it for maybe 10 years already. And so they know how to do it. And so Amazon is great because it is, in fact, very feature-rich if you're an experienced user. Or the other extreme, Google, which is feature-rich without anything but a text box, but you can type anything and it works. Again, that would also not be the approach to recommend for, you know, the average site. So I think that that's an important thing to remember, that what's good for these big famous sites, I mean, they are good and they only got big because they were good, but they were good at their specialty, I guess, not necessarily something that you would want to use in general.
So eye tracking, though, can be a little bit expensive for the average user.
Yeah.
Is there are there any tips that people can take from your book to apply to their own websites? Because I know on Twitter when I tweeted that we were having you on the show, everybody is saying, can you ask him to look at my website, which I'm sure you get requests all the time. But are there some things that people can take away from this book that can help just anyone who has their own simple website?
Right. Well, that's, of course, why we wrote the book, me and my co-author, Kara Panisse, we wrote the book because it's too expensive to do eye tracking on sort of every site. It's a convoluted technology still. But it's very interesting that when you look at the book and you see all these screenshots of various sites and where people looked at those sites, and you can generalize a lot of principles, like we talked before about some of the kind of top things about what makes people look at some ads and not other ads. And it's the same on how people look at other design elements. And one of the things we certainly know is there's a great tendency for people to look in certain spots for certain things. Like, let's say the shopping cart is a good example. It's kind of like we just ask people, okay, find the shopping cart, and their eyeballs, boom, went straight up to the right upper right-hand corner before they'd seen it, right? So that's just where the eyes naturally go for that thing. Or we ask them, where's the phone number? And it's like, okay, I'm going to look at the bottom of the page and so forth. So some of these viewing patterns are pretty general, and they're caused by so many other sites working that way. So there's a lot you can take away that says, well, these are more general principles. The other thing I want to say is I always still recommend do, you know, your own user testing as well. I mean, we have a lot of principles. Now you just showed an example of our e-commerce project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of guidelines for how to do a shopping cart, how to do a product page and so forth. I mean, that has been done before, you know. So we have guidelines for how to do it. But then you go and you do something more specific. Like I was looking at a site that sells used watches, you know, expensive but used watches. And it's like, well, I don't have any guidelines for that because that's not a site I've studied, right? So if that's your business, well, you can. The shopping cart, I'm sure, should be like any other shopping cart. But then there are going to be some special things as well, and you've got to test with your own customer base.
How do you test, though? I mean, not everybody has an eye tracking device.
No, right. I think eye tracking should really be the second or maybe the third thing people do, not the first thing. So the first thing you do is you just get hold of five customers, you know, five representative people who would realistically speaking be using your website, but they're not your friends, they're not from your company, they're from the outside, right? That's a key point. And you get them one at a time. So it's not a focus group. It's one person at a time because people don't get help to use websites. They got to figure it out, struggle mm-hmm. on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So one person, and then you do it five times, but one person at a time. Sit them at the computer and say, okay, on this site, you know, pretend that, and then you give them some realistic problem. Never do say, oh, click around the site and tell me what you think. Because you can always click around, right? You can always find something to click on, but that's not the realistic scenario. The realistic scenario is you're going to go on a flower site to send, you know, flowers to your mother for her birthday or for Mother's Day or something like that. And so you have a problem in mind. That's why you go to a website. Now, maybe the problem could be you're going to a news website to see the biggest story, or it could be you're going to a news site to find out the result of, you know, yesterday's football match, or it could be you want to check out stock market or some other problem. But the thing is, there's always something you want to do. So ask people to do that. And then the last point that's also maybe even more important than any of the other points is don't tell them how to do it. Don't say, look, you could just click here. Does that look good? Because again, once you point them to where it is, you have eliminated all these difficulties that they would have on their own. So you've got to see how they do it on their own. So you have to just like tape your mouth shut and just
watch. Yeah.
That's hard for people.
It sure is. Jacob, you wrote a paper about 2005, about 5 years ago. Talking head video is boring online.
Right.
And, you know, now that I've read it, I realize everything we've done is wrong. But what the heck? I'm glad you could be here and talk, even though we're talking heads. We appreciate it. Maybe I should get you get a little consultation from you. Maybe we can improve the talking head video. Unfortunately, we're kind of stuck with that because the subjects we talk about are really just a lot of words. But I think when it comes to the words from the Nielsen Norman group, they're really very, very good stuff. Just inspiring. I remember reading Don Norman's Design of Everyday Things years ago and just having my eyes opened to the idea that the design of something can tell people how to use it. And it really changes your life when you start thinking about design. It's just fantastic.
It really is.
But it's interesting, Nock, though, even though Don wrote his book 20 years ago, there are still doors where you can't open.
I know. I see them all the time. You're supposed to push, but it's got a handle to pull. Yeah. Drives me crazy.
So
this just shows that we can document how to do it well, and people will still do a bad job. So, I mean, the only good news is that we have, you know, lifetime employment in the usability field.
Exactly. and you're doing God's work because, as you know, I talk to users all the time, and users are consistently frustrated by electronics, by consumer electronics, by websites, by all of this stuff, because most of the time it's designed by engineers who have a completely different mindset from the end user. So I really think that the message that you're putting out there, you know, think about the user is so important, and it really makes a difference, not merely in making your site better or more usable or selling more widgets or watches, but really making this stuff more accessible because, you know, Amber and I believe that this is changing the world. It's very, very important stuff. And the easier it is for people, the more accessible it is, the better for all of us. So thank you, Jacob.
Thank you, Neil.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I will get my hands on your new book, and I can carry it around for the next 5 years.
It's great. I have it here. It's really fantastic.
Let me hold it up so you can see it.
Yeah, please do. That's a good idea.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Eye-tracking web usability. Jacob Nielsen and Kara Pernice just came out. You can get it on Amazon and everybody, published by New Writers. Thank you so much for joining us, Jacob.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Jacob.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye now. Yeah, he says, I have to look at this article because it's so funny.
That's hilarious.
It says, talking head video, forget it. It's like, nobody's going to watch it. It's very distracted. Keep all talking head video to under a minute. How long are our shows?
A lot longer than a minute. Oh, my gosh. And there's even an eye tracking map over the video.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
When
is the start? Oh, just 2005.
So it's a little while back. I don't think it's changed. I think what he's talking about is exactly the same. It's just the way it is. What are we going to do?
Funny. Oh, well, I'm sure he can't be right every time.
Oh, he's right. He's right. But, you know, when you're talking about abstract subjects like we talk about, I mean, really, I started doing audio because it doesn't make sense to do video for what we do. Basically, we do video with pictures. I mean, audio with pictures. And, you know, one of the things he says is whatever you do, don't like have a sign in the background or something that people will be looking at that will distract them. So I've made every effort to make the backdrop here completely clean and simple so that you will never get distracted
oh, yeah,
by anything.
Right. Leo, aside from you bouncing on a ball and having a clock and gadgets.
The clock is the star of the Twit Network. I realize that's the sign in the background. That's all anybody wants to know. Earlier today, I did a piece I was on CNN International to talk about the tablet. And I took it down because, of course, you know, it's a news piece and they don't want people to know when they recorded it. And everybody said, where's the clock? Where's the clock? The clock is the star of the show. We can't. What are you doing with the? There's no clock. So
I know. I do stare at it a lot, too.
You see?
I know. I think you're onto something there, Leo.
What can I do? What can I do? A couple more links. Before we do that, though, I do want to give you one more ad for our great friends at audible.com, the audiobook store par excellence. And I have a feeling that maybe there's been a little bit of Jacob Nielsen or his ilk or that at least that idea of a design in the Audible site because it's very browsable. It's very usable. It's like going to your favorite bookstore and they give you all sorts of hooks to get into it so that you can browse around. Because after all, what's the great pleasure of reading is finding a new book that you're so excited about and saying, oh, I can't wait to read this. And that's what Audible is just perfectly designed to do. So you go to the Audible site. You'll see, of course, they always have topical stuff. For instance, and I think this is probably our recommendation of the week, a book I've listened to that I really love about Dr. Paul Farmer, who was a radical public health advocate who went to Haiti and dedicated many years of his life to reforming the health system there. It's very dramatic. And, of course, the tragedy in Haiti has focused a lot of attention on it. Tracy Kidder's Mountain Beyond Mountains is one of the best books ever. You will find yourself inspired and very timely. But see, so they have that on the left. But then there's, if you go down on the right, there's all the categories. There's new in fiction, new in nonfiction, featured listener reviews, Audible editor review of the week, books they think I'd like based on other books I've read, featured readers even, featured collections, book to film. So it's a great site for people who are book lovers. Now, if you're not a book lover because you don't have time to read, please do yourself a favor. Get an Audible account. And now the next time you're in the car commuting or at the gym on the treadmill or doing the dishes or working in the garden or taking a walk with the dog, you can get some reading done. Those times you can't hold a book, you can be listening to books. They come alive in your ears. I just love Audible.com. If you go there right now, Audible.com/night, you'll sign up for the Gold account. That's one book a month. You get a credit toward your first book. And this would be an excellent one, Mountains Beyond Mountains. Pulitzer Prize winning book about Dr. Paul Farmer by, I think, one of the great writers of our time, Tracy Kidder. In fact, once you read this, you might want to go and read many of Tracy's other books. There's so many great books, including The Soul of the New Machine, which is his book about the design of a mini computer in the early days of computing that is considered a classic. This is one that is inspiring, daring, disturbing, and ultimately just really wonderful. Mountains Beyond Mountains, the story of a great man and his dedication to the people, from Tracy Kidder. So now just get it. Go to audible.com/night. Join then. Get your first book and get reading. I think you're going to love it. audible.com/night. We thank them so much for their support of the Net at Night show. And we really encourage you in all sincerity to take a look. Audible is absolutely, without Audible, I don't know what I would do. I'd go crazy. I would.
No.
That commute that I had was so horrible to San Francisco for 13 years.
Yeah.
Two, 3 hours a day in the car. Audible crazy. Saved my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, Amber MacArthur, you got another link for us, dear.
Yes, I do. I didn't see a lot about this online. It's just a neat little site that has launched from YouTube. It's actually part of YouTube.com, but it's YouTube.com/disco. And the idea
come on. What is this, a disco site?
It's not a disco site. I'm sorry, Leo. You won't be able to do any disco dancing just yet. Well, you can if you want. But it is a music discovery project and playlist creation tool.
Oh.
Now, as you know, so many people go to YouTube to watch music videos.
Right.
So they may
right.
look for the latest videos from Rihanna or Beyonce or who knows. And this, it allows you to actually go in and you can pick an artist that you like.
Okay, I just entered Bob Dylan. No, let me do a Canadian for you.
Okay.
Let's see. I was watching the Haitian. Did you watch the Haitian relief?
Yes.
Telethon. It was just incredible. And
yes,
they did
was.
A Leonard Cohen song that I just love so much. Oh. Hallelujah. Justin Timberlake doing that. Wasn't that incredible?
Oh. Yes. And I love Leonard Cohen.
Oh, me too. I know you do. And it gave me a new respect for Justin Timberlake. He did a beautiful job on that.
It's
so
great.
Let me put Leonard Cohen, one of the great Canadian singer-songwriters in here, still around. Still performing, and I think he's in his late 70s, early 80s. Just a great guy. So what am I going to find? Leonard Cohen stuff? Yes.
Yeah. So what it will do, it will create you an instant playlist.
Look at this.
So you can just all of a sudden put in Leonard Cohen and start listening to Leonard Cohen.
And then related stuff, too. Look at that.
Yep. Up on your screen, and related content as well. And there's a little description of the artist, so a little biography of that artist. So related artists as well. The mixtape, which mixes up some
yes,
of his songs.
Yes, so there's Van Morrison, Lou Reed, Patti Smith. There's other stuff that's related, all of whom I love, all of these people. And somebody I never heard of, Andrew Calhoun, that maybe I would like, because Tim Buckley. Oh, this is great. So that's a playlist.
Yeah. So you can just create that as a playlist, and you can save that, and you can create others. So it's fun for people who are sitting at their computer and just want to discover some new music or old music, and have a way, instead of going in individually from video to video via YouTube searches, you can do this all in one destination and have it actually do the work in the back end for you.
This is really neat.
It's cool, huh?
Has it been around a while? I never heard of it.
I don't know. You know what? I just saw it on Waxy Links today, and I think he posted it, maybe Andy posted it yesterday or the day before, but I haven't heard anything else about it anywhere, because everything I'm reading is all about the tablet, so right. There's no room for...
Yeah, forget having any tech news for services. The next week. You might as well just save
but
your announcement.
I like it. It's, you know, I go to YouTube all the time to watch music videos, and the fact that I can just do it in one destination and actually get the proper videos, I think is
kind of fun. So the disco, don't be fooled, is not disco music. See, that's the mistake they made. It's discovery, short for discovery.
Yes.
Okay.
Discovery.
So I'm glad we got that straight.
Yeah. For all you disco fans out there. So that's a site that you can probably waste some time on. And then, Leo, I had to include this last link because we've talked a little bit about Oprah and social media and how every time she goes to use something, people start talking about it, like Skype or Twitter, whatever it might be.
I just saw the funniest 30 Rock last night. It was from season 3, so it's old. Do you ever watch that show? Tina Fey's show? It's such a funny show. I'd never seen it before, and it was on our Netflix Watch It Now, so I've been watching it on the Roku box, and we've gone through like 30 episodes in like 2 days. And there's a funny one where she's flying to Chicago, and Jack gives her, you know, like an Ambien, something to a sleeping pill. He says, but watch out because you may have erotic nightmares, strange delusions, and violent actions that you never know anything about. And she takes it, and she's sitting next to like a 13-year-old girl, and she thinks it's Oprah. And she flew the whole flight. She comes back. She says, I met Oprah. It wasn't Oprah. It was some, but she was deluded because of the pill. I don't know where that came from, but Oprah was on the episode. It was very funny. Pretending.
Oh, that is
the
hilarious.
Oprah she was seeing, yeah.
Yeah, so this
so
is
Nat, not, Nate is a friend of Oprah, a fool.
Yeah, you know how Oprah has all of these people on her show,
right?
And they become celebrities afterwards.
He's an interior designer, though. He's not a web designer, is he?
No, he is an interior designer. And this is the funny thing. I guess he got hooked on Twitter after some convincing. And now he has designed some Twitter backgrounds.
Oh, dear.
Leo, is it just me or do you find this terribly funny?
Oh, dear.
I know. It's really come to this.
Well, let me see. Let's see. Are they attractive?
No, they're just really simple and boring. The average.
That's so nice, Nate.
10 times better. I know.
Wow.
Anyway, you know what? They're very conservative. I mean, I think that a lot of people have created such amazing things on Twitter. But I thought it was hilarious because this guy's a hard... I guess I don't know if everybody knows him, but I'm guessing yes. I don't watch Oprah. So
I don't watch Oprah.
Maybe once in a while I see her. But I guess he's a very famous interior designer. And the fact that he has gone to the effort to create Twitter backgrounds and he's promoting them on Facebook, I just thought it was... Just like the worlds are colliding right in front of me, Leo.
Well, you know, that's the time for us to get off of Twitter and find something else. Although I can't now because, you know, I'm validated. I'm a real boy now on Twitter.
I know you
are. They actually verified my name, my account, and they've rejiggered the suggested user list. So I don't mind being on this list anymore because for a while, you know, the suggested user list was just a joke. And whoever got on it immediately got a million followers just because it was kind of automatic when you sign up for Twitter. Now, if you log in and you go to Twitter and you press and you do, let me log in, I'll show you. You do find people. Just log into my Twitter account. You'll see that it's really the way it should have been, which is, let's see, find friends. Nope, that's not right. Oh, browse suggestions. There it is. They have categories, arts and design, books, business, charity, entertainment, family, fashion, funny, health. See, that's good. These are like the Twitter lists. And then there's a lot of names on there, and they rotate who's on top. And most importantly, nobody's automatically checked, right? So it's you have to actually check somebody, which is how it should be. So I don't mind being on this list now. In fact, I'm on the technology list somewhere, and sometimes I'm at the top of the list, sometimes not, depending on... You know, because it's just random. Right.
Okay, yeah.
And so I think this is good. And so if you want to follow somebody on the technology list, you have to scroll through it and actively press the follow button. There's no automatic follows. And I haven't found that my follower count has gone up a little bit, but not by millions, which is fine. I don't want a bunch of people who don't know who I am following me. It looks like they've taken me off of it because I don't see myself on there anymore.
Yeah, Leo, I went there and I couldn't find you on there, but I know.
Maybe it rotates. Or maybe I committed the cardinal sin.
Well, you mentioned it.
I actually said something. Maybe you're not supposed to say anything.
I don't know.
I don't mind. Dave Weiner wrote a letter to the board of directors saying, take me off. I don't want to be on the... But see, I don't find this at all offensive. This is how the list should be. This is if you want to see somebody, if you're interested in politics, you click politics and you see who's on there and then you can click a link and say, follow them. I think that this
is... So how do they come up with the list?
Well, I guess you could argue that maybe that's arbitrary, but somebody's got to do that. I don't mind that part.
No, you know why I'm asking, Leo? I looked at the list. Now, this has nothing to do with myself being a tech person.
You're not on it either, are you?
No, which is totally fine because there are plenty of bigger fish out there.
See, I refreshed it and now I'm on it. So I think it's a very big list. I think you have to refresh it. I'm right there between Steve Case, the founder of AOL, and Bill Gates, who founded something. I can't remember what.
I don't know what.
And so you see, I am on there, but I wasn't on there last time. So I think it's a rotating list.
Maybe they refreshed it.
Yeah,
the only thing I noticed about the list, and I don't know if this is always the case, but it's almost all, there are no women. If you looked at the list.
Well, there are not that many women. There's Gina Trapani.
There's a couple on the list. Yeah, it's
come on, that's kind of the face of tech. It's not a good thing, but it isn't that way?
I don't know. I think there's... They more could women have more than women. That they list could presents.
Have, you're right. Deuce should be on here, and
there's more. I mean, I could name quite a few women who deserve to be on there. Who are, I'm thinking of Jeannie Jardin from
Jeannie Jardin. She should be on there.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
There's Jenna, Jenna Wortham.
That was my observation.
That's a good point. That's a good observation. Now, do they have a list for bloggers? No. See, so tech is kind of the catch-all, because there's not a blogger list. There's not a... Maybe they need a list for bloggers, and you'd get more money on that.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Staff picks. Staff picks for Haiti. So staff picks is kind of where the original suggested user list. And Justine's on that. Moxie's on that. Kristen Hirsch. There's more women on the staff picks. Angela Ruggiero. That's a good point. There are not a lot of women on the tech list.
No, not a lot at all. Yeah, I was surprised. Anyway, that was my little... Because I was looking for you on the list.
Yeah, should have picked up on that. You're right.
Leo, I followed your tweets. You know, you can't escape me.
I did tweet. I was so happy to be verified for number one. And then I saw that somebody said, did you know you're on the SUL? I said, what? And I was a little perturbed because I don't want a million followers who have no idea who I am. And that's how SUL worked before. You just signed up and all these boxes were checked and you said, okay, this isn't like that. And I think this is perfect. This is exactly what Twitter should have done. This is
what it should have done. Yeah, I agree with you.
And I still recommend people if you're looking for people, go to wefollow.com, Kevin Rose's site.
Yeah, that's great.
They've got a great algorithm now that kind of tries to rank people, not by total followers, which was kind of a funky way to do it, but by some sort of authority. They're trying to figure out, authority. So let me see the technology here, how many women there are. By the way, Kevin Rose, number one, Google, number two, then me, Veronica. Veronica's not on their list, is it?
Well, see, but this is in order of
Justine. This is by
followers, right?
No, this is by authority.
Authority, okay, but it does have some order. See, with Twitter, it's just...
Random.
Random,
Well, it's kind of random because it's most influential. So Kevin's number one with 1.1 million followers, Google with 2.1 million, then me with a mere 158, then Veronica with 1.6 million, Mashable with 1.9.
Oh, I am on this list down at
the... Yeah, you should be on this list. Callie's on this list. Amber, there you are. You're number 20. We got to get you. Wait a minute. 36. Come on. Amber Mack, follow her on Twitter. Please, folks. What is this? This is shameful.
Shameful.
Power friending out in June with 20 people, 20 complete strangers on the cover.
Me and Twitter, 20 Twitter friends.
20 Twitter friends. You can also follow Amber on her video. And by the way, far from Talking Heads video podcast, it's called Command N at CommandN.tv. And of course, you can see her on The Real TV with Web Nation. That's on CB24 all over Canada. all over. Her blog is AmberMack.com, and she's on Twitter. Gosh darn it. Follow her. At AmberMack.
Leo's all angry.
Follow her. Do me a favor. Just follow Amber Mack. Look at that great background. Did you have that Oprah guy do that?
No. I'm not letting him touch my background. He's too conservative.
You got the arrows. You got the crisscrosses. No crisscrosses.
That was a random Twitter person as well. This I have a lot nice. Of friends on Twitter who I don't really know. I'm sure you're in the same boat.
Nope. I know everybody on Twitter.
Really?
Every single person on Twitter. I know. I've met. I've shaken their hand. I've touched them personally.
That's just frightening.
Yes, it really
is. That's my cue to go if you
bug out.
Have touched every person on Twitter. Okay, Leo, I will be watching you over the next couple of days as we have announcements and everybody
else. We're
going
to do our obsessive compulsive coverage of the Apple announcement on Wednesday, the 27th, all day, starting at 8:30 a.m., going to 5 p.m. Pacific. It's 11:30 a.m. your time, 8 p.m. your time. And if you're at around the world, of course, UTC is 27. What is it? No, 8 a.m. is 17:30 UTC. So join us. Is it 15 or 17? I don't care. No, it's plus 8.
Plus
so
eight.
It's 16:30. No. Yeah, 16:30.
Live math never goes well.
Live.twit.tv. Watch me do more math. And then don't forget to get your prediction at unweary.com and fill that sheet out. We can see who wins for the most. The obsessive compulsive coverage at Web8339 says that started last week. In fact, about 8 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's true. Amber, we'll see you next time. Have a great evening. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We'll see you next time on Net at Night.